Guess who and guess what? Footy Prime is launching a gin and we're having a party to celebrate. Thursday, June 6th, join the whole FP crew for Footy Prime's one-night stand at Nickel 9 Distillery in Toronto. Come celebrate Footy Prime's one-ball gin with Nickel 9 Distillery mixologists on hand, Charmin's proper pies, meet and greet and photo ops with your favorite primers, and a live Atska's Almost Anything podcast. Footy Prime's one-night stand, June 6th at 7 p.m. till when we kick you out. Tickets at eventbrite.ca. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Oi. The boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language. And sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mates and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Dream, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal 3 Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Listener, we just decided it's week 12, so whether you like it or not, this is CF Montreal 3 Questions week 12. I'm Amy Walsh, and I'm joined, as usual, by Ollie Brett, who is a play-by-play man, a host for RDS, as well as BPM Sports, and a great show called FC 9 for 9 with in-depth and intimate and candid interviews with everybody in the soccer space in this province and this country. How are you, Ollie?
I'm doing very well, and I'm delighted that we made on week 12 or whatever it is the best decision we've made so far, which was not recording early on Tuesday morning and waiting until Thursday. We didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't expect anything to happen, but boy, was that the right decision.
Yeah, it really was, because a lot has gone down. It never a dull moment
nope.
In Montreal, and the last week has felt like a month. So, things kicked off a week ago when the story broke that Mathieu Chouinard, the homegrown face emblematic of the club, wanted a trade. He wanted out of Montreal. Then a shambolic performance on the weekend, mm-hmm. how the team was going to deal with all of that internal turmoil, you would guess. And then as they were preparing to face Forge on Tuesday in the first leg of the quarterfinals of the Canadian Championship, news broke that Olivier Renard was also perhaps on his way out. So that is yet to be confirmed by the club. This is all reported and lots of other things that have come out since. But in the week that I just alluded to, this very long week, has the club, Ollie, this is our first question, lost all of the goodwill and positivity that it garnered in the preseason, that buzz, the 15,000 season tickets sold, everybody kind of back into it, open arms, community, everybody behind this club. How did we end up here, Ollie?
Oh boy, those are two very different questions.
We have 20 minutes. Go.
I was doing okay wrapping my head around the first part, but now
go with the first bit.
How did we end up here? Now, we might have to go back to 30 year. I'll go back to my degree in history, I think, and I'll go over the last 30 odd years and maybe we'll get somewhere. Has it lost everything that was built, not only I don't want to say just because you're talking about a sporting director who's been there since 2019, right? That's the biggest nugget. Everything seems to start. You were absolutely right in saying none of this was officially confirmed by anyone, but everything lines up. That's the only thing I'll say about that. It starts with Mathieu Chouinard asking for a trade. Then we don't really understand how Olivier Renard would have made such an offer, which was reportedly 350,000 for a guy who's on 275 and was asking 600, which personally I find was not greedy for a second. 600 is what I thought they'd end up agreeing on. I thought Chouinard would ask for 750, the club offer 550, and meet somewhere in the middle. You were obviously miles away, and it just didn't have the Renard signature. Just the way it was done, and you have to know that Mathieu Chouinard's agent is an agent that's worked with Olivier Renard and the club an awful lot over the years, which is the head scratcher, because why, to keep that relationship alive, would you send a player to put in a transfer request knowing that the relationship maybe doesn't break altogether, but it's definitely tarnished or it takes a wrong turn? Well, you understand a bit better when Olivier Renard is now reportedly leaving. Have you lost everything that was built? I don't think that for people who are going to show up at the stadium on Saturday, the answer is yes, because I think what's important to them is the product on the pitch. Now, for the hardcore fans, for the media, for people who are genuinely interested in the club as a whole, the business side, its different actors, Gabriel Gervais, sporting directors, etc. Yeah, that's a big, big blow, because it's just a flashback to how things were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 25 years ago. And that's not in a good way. I think Gabriel Gervais coming in as a president, he wanted to bring back the essence of what Montreal Impact was. And I thought that was absolutely necessary after a rebrand where the snowflake, the logo became a snowflake, the name was changed, there was an awful lot of turmoil, the ultras left. Having said that, reconnecting with the essence of the Impact does not equate, or shouldn't equate, going back to how the Impact used to operate. And I think that for people who've been following the club very closely over the years and who have it to heart, that's concerning.
Yeah, I think it's a case of the more things change, the more they stay the same. That group that you're alluding to, that you're talking about, where even if they're entirely different, people are going to link what's happened in the past week with a player like Chouinard. And I think that because it's Mathieu Chouinard, I think it hits home. It hits people kind of in all the feels, because they're saying, this is what the club is holding up. This is, you know, they're turning the page. This is what they want to espouse. They want to promote players from here. They want to showcase Quebec talent. And yet we can't manage to hold on to a bright young talent like Mathieu Chouinard. So, you know, you look at and the things that Renard has done as well, and they're going to link it regardless to a Wilfred Nancy leaving, even though the two things might be entirely different, you know, but that's what people are going to do. So in order for this club to make strides, it just seems like they can never get out of their own way.
The part where I'd be careful is in speaking in plurals. Is it they? Is it a single person? Like, what's the common thread? And obviously, like, the elephant in the room is, how involved is Joey Saputo? Like, nobody wants to really address that. And I totally understand, because, look, we're about to experience something absolutely amazing at Stade Saputo at the weekend. A World Cup, the World Cup winner of the last World Cup, not a World Cup 20 odd years ago. World Cup winner is about to show up. He's got the Ballon d'Or in his suitcase when he lands in Montreal. He's the best to many player to ever play the game. That's all because of the Saputo family. And it's going to be in a stadium that's full house. It's going to be in a stadium that sold all its season tickets. It's going to be in a stadium where, when I was working at the club in 2010, had one stand on the side close to the Olympic Stadium. It wasn't a stand. It was tents. Like, people forget that there was no roof understand on the south side, I mean, it's incredible what the family built and what they managed to attract here. And look at how people, not just media, because lots of media is covering the club, not just when Messi is around. Ask Wilfried Nancy in Columbus how easy his job is in terms of media. There's nobody. Same thing if you ask in Vancouver, there's a lot less. Look, listen to Vanni Sartini complaining about the lack of coverage. So that's all because of what the Saputo family did. And you've got now sponsors coming in as well, because they're just a locomotive of something stimulating, something that people want to get behind. So that's why everybody's hesitant to say it's amazing, comma. And the comma is, what do all these people, Mathieu Chouanière wanting to leave, Olivier Renard maybe leaving, Wilfried Nancy asking, what do they have in common? I don't have the answer to that, but they have to have something in common, because they're exactly what the club wants, the values that the club wants to promote, they're products of your system, because Olivier Renard has not been here 6 months now. And he says, well, you know what? Montreal is not for me. Just last year in June, he was saying, my family loves it here. I love it here. I'm really attached to the city. And boom, something or some things happen. And now he'd be on his way out. What's the common thread? And I think that's the big question to ask for Gabriel Gervais, if it wasn't something to do with him and the relationship with all these people.
Yeah, because we have heard as well, Olivier Renard be very complimentary of the Saputo family himself. Talk about everything that it offers the soccer community, everything they've mm-hmm. done in MLS and prior to that, and what they allow him to do. So there's a disconnect. And as you said, there's a common thread that links all of those things. And I guess we don't really know yet what that is. So as I said before, though, never a dull moment. But this team has no time to waste here, because the Canadian Championship in the past, so last year, and them facing Forge is something that happens seemingly on a yearly basis. So yep. Last year they were able to dispatch of the CPL dynasty, Bobby Smyrniotis led Forge 2-0. The year before, 3-0. It seems to be a Sanusi Ibrahim coming out party as well. So it wasn't to be this year, and lots surrounding that game as well. But so in the past, these games, this is our second question, acted as catalysts to propel the team's success in league play. But was that away performance enough to provide that spark and get this team back on track?
Now, I really don't want to lack any respect to Forge. This has nothing to do with the tie itself. It has everything to do with the context we just spoke about for a few minutes. To me, it has the value of a training session. Like, for players, some of them had a chance to showcase themselves because they haven't had many minutes, but there's too much going on at the club right now. And Messi's just around the corner. So I don't think that it can be any sort of reference. A bit like FC Dallas a week and a half ago played against Houston. They played with 10 men from the fifth minute onwards. And I asked Nico Estevez before the game last week, like, can that be a point of reference? Can you actually use that? Or is it such a unicorn of a game because you play 85 minutes with a man up? He said, yeah, it's a really tricky one. We can take some things from the game, but at the same time, it was so abnormal that we can't really make that our benchmark. And I think that goes for this game during the week. I think what you wanted is just to come back with a job to finish at home. Would you have liked to get on the score sheet? To create more chances? Yes, absolutely. But what you needed to do the most was avoid a catastrophe, which would have been losing that game and now just pumping more doubt in a club. And I'm not talking about the team, a club that has an awful lot in it at the moment. So I think that was the main mission midweek in a match that was played at 11 o'clock in the morning as well. So that was a potential banana skin. I've never heard so many kids screaming at a pro football match in all my life. I've never seen a Mexican wave done so often as I did at Tim Hortons Field. But you know what? That was the charm of that cup tie.
But it was not only kids screaming, but these school-age kids engaged in the game. And Bobby Spiraniotis talked about it. It wasn't just, the big jumbotron, if they had one, just telling kids when to make noise. It was kids who were following the match. They were engaged. They were like legit supporters, which I think was surprising to everybody, especially the home team. But going back to what you just said about playing at 11, I don't know if you remember from your playing days, Ollie, but in the NCAA circuit, we had a Friday night game under the lights. It was the best feeling, you know, to be there with your teammates in front of the crowd, your friends from school and other athletes in Nebraska. It was just an electric atmosphere. And then there was the coming down for the 1 p.m. kickoff on Sunday afternoon. And it was the worst. It was so tough mentally to get up for those games. So I can only imagine, you know, and the shakeup too for those players in terms of your pregame routine, when you're eating, when you're waking up, when the pregame meetings happen. It just, it comes at you really quick when it's an early kickoff.
And let's put it back into context. Forget the Mathieu Choignard thing. Forget the Olivier Renard thing. Just look at your sporting week. You go get hammered at Geodis Park against Nashville. And the next, now you've got something, a cup tie at 11 o'clock in the morning in Hamilton that's sandwiched in between getting hammered in Nashville against a team that was going nowhere.
They didn't go out. Let's be clear. They just got hammered on the pitch.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. It's a Broadway is for another. Whoever has been to Nashville, you'll understand you can quickly be 4-1 down after just a few drinks. To figure a speech going. And on the other end, you've got Messi and Suarez coming to town. Just mentally, how you refocus for 11 o'clock kickoff against a team that you don't really know, that you've, unfortunately, I'd say from a Montreal psychology perspective, you've beaten repetitively over the years. So are you really locked in? No, I don't think you were. And that's why I'm saying that I don't give a ton of value to that game. Having said that, up top, I was disappointed with Forge. You never felt that last ball was really going to come in or they were really threatening. But everything from the back to that final third, that team is solid. That team really moves the ball around really, really well. You just look at it. And if you were going to say, you know, are they MLS? Are they CPL? For those specific lines, the midfield, the back line, the goalkeeper, the way they build and just behave with one another, it's really high level stuff from Bobby Smirniotis' side.
Absolutely. And they've been doing that for years. So I alluded to them as, or referred to them as a dynasty, and they are. So when you talk about the gap between CPL and MLS, that you take a team of the quality that Forge has, and that gap is a lot smaller than it is if you would compare it to any other team across that league. But you were talking about bright spots with Forge, but I'll go back to the game and we'll finish with this. Bright spots for CF Montreal, they were able to get that away goal. But then you also see, you know, this team, despite the Choignard, I think there should have been more focus on the Choignard bowl. We didn't really get that because Mathieu Choignard not available to media. But you have the team, CF Montreal as the club, reconnecting with their identity, their DNA. I think what makes them hum and tick continually year after year in the first appearance of Biello. So with a dad who's currently interim coach of the men's national team, but now his son featuring for the same club where he's a legend. So you get him having his first appearance, and then you also get Bryce Duke on the score sheet with his first goal of the season. So two different bright spots, but I think equally compelling stories and equally important to this side.
I agree. What you hope is that this is another stepping stone for Bryce Duke to come back to what he showed a few weeks back in what was by far his best game for CF Montreal since coming in last year. Having said that, you spoke of Sanusi Ibrahim. He's Mr. Canadian Championship, right? So that's why I don't give too much importance, especially to a guy like Bryce Duke, who technically was your number 10, right? He's the guy you were investing in, you believed in before bringing in Dominik Yankov, is scoring a goal and looking half decent in a Canadian Championship your benchmark? For me, absolutely not. Is it good to get back to getting a bit more confidence in you and getting some reps in? Yes, that can be really, really valuable. To come back to Alessandro Biello, how comfortable or uncomfortable do you think Mauro Biello was when he saw where his son was coming in at the back, you know, on the right? It's not the position he's used to playing. He's used to playing down the middle of the park. Mm-hmm. But fair play to the club, fair play to Laurent Courtois for saying, you know what, these minutes are useful and you're actually able to do it. It's the perfect use of a cup game in the context of this specific match, knowing that it shouldn't really hurt you. It's going to be very beneficial for him, and it shows him that you believe in it. And it also sends a message to young academy kids, hey, you're not that far. You need to work really, really hard. But once you get there, we will open the door. And unfortunately, that's another big disappointment of Olivier Renard leaving, if that's going to be the case, because before he came, academy players would make it to the first team, and then they basically end up in a dead end. There was no plan for them. The door wasn't really open. They were always compared to 28-year-old the European players or Argentine players that obviously had more experience and were better. But was the potential better? Was the value for money really that far off? Unfortunately, the question was too often, no, these kids could do it if they had a chance, which has been proven since 2019 when Olivier Renard came in. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how they navigate those Quebec developed players over the next few years if Renard leaves.
That's a really good point. And you also just described every women's footballer's experience coming up through an academy or playing university, mm-hmm. playing with youth national teams and not getting a crack with a full team, and then full stop, dead end. So hopefully this is my little smile and wink and a nod to Project 8 starting next year, and cheers to more opportunities offered to our Canadian women.
And a CPL team in Quebec, by the way. I would just use that. If we're opening doors, we'll open a few. You're very welcome.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
Well, and then with the game happening at Claude Robillard last night.
6,400 people. Incredible. Are you kidding me? And honestly, that game should have been 1-1, and it turns into 2-0 when there's like
handball.
Okay, so you do a bit of yoga, right?
Yeah.
What's a natural body position?
Not in yoga.
That rule is like, I don't know how they explain that that's not a penalty. The ref sees it straight away. I mean,
well positioned as well, 5 yards off of it, clear line of sight to where the ball hits his arm.
I mean, because what, 6'5", 6'6", if you can't spot his arm stretched out and touching the ball, and then they go off the other way, I don't get how that wasn't a penalty, and how harsh is it that on 6 seconds later, they're 2-0 down, they go off, and that's Kerr that scores that goal, right? And on a breakaway, mm-hmm. that was harsh. That was gut wrenching. But honestly, the atmosphere at Claude Robillard, I'm sure you remember going up. I used to live in Quebec City at the time when the Impact were playing there, and we'd get in the car and little Hyundai accents, Burgundy. They made those Burgundy cars for about 2 years. And then I don't know where they all fell off the face of the earth, because there's definitely none left. But we used to drive up to the stadium. The atmosphere was good at the time, you know, because there was no real Stade Saputo to compare it to. But the atmosphere wasn't that good. What CS Saint Laurent did with their fans, and with only a week to mm-hmm. sell the tickets, like, that was absolutely amazing. And John Herdman recognized that after the game as well.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Bernadeschi just after that getting subbed on and toying with the CS Saint Laurent players and kind of embarrassing the goalkeeper on that free kick.
And a goalkeeper who was amazing.
He was
absolutely outstanding. But that just shows you, the pros, you switch off for half a second. That's it. You're 3-0 down. That was harsh as well.
Yeah, but great memories for me at Claude Rabillard. I was a ball girl in 94, probably too old to be a ball girl, but I found my way in there. And it was the women's national team playing in CONCACAF qualifying. And so I got to see Luce Mongrain, got to see Annie Caron. I got to see my friend and eventual longtime teammate in Isabel Morneau compete before they went on to the World Cup in 1995. And just to see them in front of my eyes. And then also being a pitch that I sometimes played on. Mm-hmm. And then oftentimes at the back on that terrible turf on the other one, but, and also the place where I played my second cap. So my first cap was against China in Ottawa. And then we came to Montreal against China as well. And I played there in front of my friends and family. So incredible memories on that pitch. So I was happy to see League One side CS Saint Laurent get the same.
Just to finish on that, you know, you're a bit too old to be a ball girl when the manager is thinking about subbing you on the pitch.
Maybe that's what I was hoping was going to happen.
There you go. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. I think I was in grade 11. Way too old. Anyway, okay. Moving on to our third question. So that game against, the cup tie against Forge, Edwards is also added to the infirmary, which already includes, listener, please be patient, Martinez, Kokoro, Opoku, Duty, that's for you, James Sharman, Yankov, Lapalainen, Saliba, and Sosa. So some of those guys working their way back. Lots of long-term injuries there as well. But you already alluded to it, Ollie. I mean, with the juggernaut that is Miami rolling into town, with Messi after setting 3 records in a single half and 6 goal contributions, hat-trick for Suarez, both of them co-leaders of the Golden Boot. Can a severely depleted Montreal squad even hope to compete?
Just based on Miami, okay? This is not a jab at CF Montreal, a club which I think is in the right direction with Laurent Courtois. You see like glimpses of some really interesting stuff. Even at times last week against Nashville, it's just that for some reason that it collapses or you concede too many goals. It's the worst defense in the East at the moment. So it's way more to do with Miami. Could a full CF Montreal squad hope to defend against a Miami team that hadn't scored in 45 minutes last week against New York? They were led and they scored 6. Messi scores 1. 5 assists in 25 games, all competitions since Messi came in, 13 times. 13 out, that's more than half the time they score 3 or more. That is insane. He's on 12 assists right now. Obviously, the 5 last week give a good hand, but do you know how old the record for assists in MLS is?
No.
2000. You know who has it? Carlos Valderrama has the record for assists in MLS. He's going to beat it. And he's not, I think Valderrama played 32 games in 2000. Messi's not going to play 32 games, but he's still going to get that. That team is just so, so strong. And I think so far this season, they've taken 17 points after conceding the first goal, which means you're never safe, ever.
Right.
And now you need to be a strong-willed person. If you're Tata Martino and you're trying to tell Lionel Messi to either start on the bench or come off during the game, that guy is saying, look, I don't run anyway. Suarez is ahead of me. Like that run Suarez made, I believe it was for his third goal, maybe his second. The movement is just so, so smart. And that's the big question mark I have. Because for Joel Waterman, for example, it's going to be a massive, massive physical battle. Because Suarez is a pest. But he's also so smart to make himself be forgotten by one and just show up on the wrong shoulder of the second defender who's now confused. Then it's chaos at the back. And you've got Messi who, looking in the stands, waving at some Argentinian guy who'll have an Argentine flag, he just slips it in and you're done. So yes, sporting wise, from a football perspective, I'm very concerned for CF Montreal at the weekend. And I would be, even if they had a full squad, Miami's just that good at the moment.
Yeah. Steering it back to CF Montreal and away from Miami for a second. And you talked about Courtois' philosophy, the way that this team wants to play. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've fully seen it. We've seen it in fits and starts, and also in good performances and bad performances. You know, you see it in glimpses. With a fully healthy squad, do you believe that this team has the personnel to play the expansive and intricate possession-heavy style that Courtois espouses?
Yeah. Yeah, because right now I think you hit a massive roadblock when you go beyond the midfield. I just don't see guys holding the ball well enough, combining with each other well enough, which was a challenge. Remember when Kokoro and Martinez and Yankov played together, it wasn't perfect. Like, we were just waiting. I remember speaking about this here on the show with you. We were waiting for the reps. No, the only reps you got is like ice baths and physio treatment, because that's all you've done over the last weeks or month or so. So yeah, I think they do have what it takes. Is it to compete and be in a top four position? Maybe not. But is it to be comfortable enough to think you're going to make the playoffs? Yes. And that means that my answer is twofold. I think they can produce that type of football, but I also think that type of football can lead to winning games. It's not just nice on the eye and interesting to look at. I think, especially with Martinez and Kokoro, I mean, their presence up top. I spoke to you about Jean-Anthony Vilsain's need to be more physically turned to, against Nashville was a great example. He needs to have more hunger to win his battle against his defender or his defenders. That needs to be as much a part of his psyche as scoring the goals, because if you don't get through the first hurdle, I don't think the chances will come half as often as you think. But you don't need to tell Martinez or Kokoro that. Like, that's part of their DNA. So I think that would be a huge difference if they were in the squad at the moment.
And regardless of the personnel, they have to get back to, you know, better speed of play and execution and the intangibles that Courtois always talks about, with the hard work, with the counter pressing, with the high energy, with the willingness to compete. Because that match in Nashville was tough to watch because they were going through the motions. It was lackluster. There was no threat, no bite. So they have to get back to the type of football where it's kind of character driven. You're doing all of the grunt work, and then you're layering on the attractive brand of soccer on top of it. I think that's what this team has to get back to.
Just very quickly on that, I'm just wondering how much, because what we understand now is that the news of Olivier Renard potentially leaving was starting to trickle in the hours or maybe in the day before the game. And I'm wondering how much of a kind of a, what's happening here mindset was in the squad at that
time. The uncertainty.
Professionally, you need to stay focused on the game. I'm absolutely not making excuses. I'm just curious as to how much, because CF Montreal doesn't spend money, right? They're never going to win on spending unless something drastically changes. And you go back to what it looked like when Drogba, Piatti, and et cetera were there. You win on coherence. You win on a project, a philosophy, your principles, and making sure that everybody's on board and the pilot points in the right direction. And the pilot, from a sporting perspective, is not Laurent Courtois. To me, that's the co-pilot. The pilot is the sporting director, because he's the guy who puts the right people in the right chairs, in the right seats on the bus. Now, the fact that he's gone, is everybody wondering, like, my next contract, who is somebody else going to come in? Are we going to change our way of playing? If that started to creep in the squad, somebody really needs to rein it in, because as we saw last week, that can be really, really dangerous if that affected the team in some way in Nashville.
Yeah, they absolutely have to get that doubt out of it, because once that creeps in, it's hard to shake it. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely done. Was there anything else that you wanted to hit on, Ollie, before we say bye?
No, just that this past week or 10 days or so, a trade was asked by your MVP. Olivier Renard might be going. You get trashed in Nashville, a game at 11 o'clock in the morning where you're trying to digest your rashers and eggs against Forge. Talk about a week where you could have just gone to Cuba, or you could have just gone to the Dominican Republic, forget all about it, come back and ask everyone, what happened? It's just a feeling I'm getting at the moment, because we should just be talking about this amazing game that's coming with Messi at the weekend at Stade Saputo. But hey, the world of sports is not quite made as rationally and logically as that.
No, it's not. And maybe the one thing there is that all of this noise around the team, the negative noise, perhaps took a little bit of that spotlight away from CS Sonorant as they were set to face TFC. So then they're going next week or the week after to BMO Field. So good luck to them. They've got a lot of ground to make up. But I think that was a testament to how much talent we do have in this province. So that was, did you want to say something else?
No, CPL in Quebec. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of stuff on the horizon, hopefully. Okay, so this has been CF Montreal 3 Questions for week 12. It was a big one. It was a long one. But it all wraps up this weekend as CF Montreal face Inter Miami and Messi and company. So we'll see how that ends up. Hopefully it's not a messy affair. So thank you very much. I'm Amy Walsh, and Albie Brett was with me, and cheers for listening.
All the best.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.